sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
We're on the last two verses of this first chapter, the third section. These last two verses are called praise, stuti. It often comes at the end of the section. So let's look at verse 26.
Nachiketam upakhyanam, nachiketam upakhyanam, mrityuproktam sanatanam, mrityuproktam sanatanam, uktva shrutva cha medhavi, uktva shrutva cha medhavi, brahmaloke mahiyate,
brahmaloke mahiyate.
Okay. Everybody can hear me? Jackie, can you hear me? So now I've come on there.
Did you log her out of the other meeting?
No, I'm not logged out, and I'm here's the host on this one without any.
She's not in the other meeting.
I mean this one. Let's see if anybody hears me. Oh, sound is fine here? Okay, sorry. Some other strange things are here, but if sound is fine, that's great. I'll just continue. Sorry about that. Okay, good.
Nachiketam upakhyanam. Nachiketam, nachiketasa praptam, means that which was gained by Nachiketas. What was that? Upakhyanam. Upakhyanam is the story, but in this case it means the whole story of the Katha Upanishad is that discussion between Lord Yama and Nachiketas. And so it starts out in the very first chapter, the first section, telling the whole story of how it came to be that Nachiketas even met Lord Yama, Lord Death. But then after that, it becomes After the three boons have been granted, and Lord Yama becomes very pleased with Nachiketas, he starts to teach him. That's all part of the story. Okay. So, what they say here is that this teaching that was gained by Nachiketas, Nachiketam for Sanskrit students is a tadita, means that which was gained by or that which belongs to. That's different meanings, but here it means Nachiketasa praptam, that which was gained, that which is obtained by Nachiketas, gained by Nachiketas. Upakhyanam, this teaching, mrityu proktam, which was taught by mrityu, by Lord Yama. Okay? So this teaching gained by Nachiketas, which is mrityu proktam, taught by mrityu. Sanatanam, which itself is eternal. And here the eternality is called apekshika nityatvam. It's an eternality means that with every cycle of the creation, because it's Vedic, these Upanishads, including Katha Upanishad, come into manifestation. Uh-huh. Right? So from beginningless time, uh-huh, This particular Upanishad will manifest over and over and over again from beginningless time. It's sanatana. So it's eternal, it's not timeless. Timeless is Brahman. So eternal means it continues from a cycle to cycle to cycle of the creation, sanatana. Now he says, so this eternal or beginningless Upanishad taught by Mrityu to Nachiketas and gained by Nachiketas, he says this now. Uktwa shrutwa cha medhavi. First of all, let's take shrutwa. Shrutwa means, according to what our Shankara says this, Shrutwa acharya bhya. Having learned this from the acharyas, from the teachers, from the gurus, having learned this, then uktwa, and having taught it to the brahmanas. Brahmanas are, you don't have to take that as yourself being a brahmana in the traditional sense of we were born as a brahmana or kshatriya. Brahmana means predominantly sattva. That your antakarna is predominantly sattva, predominantly has enough shanti to be a mumukshu, to be able to receive this teaching. So brahmana here, so we say uktwa, this is from the bhasha. So shrutwa, having gained this knowledge from the teacher, from your teacher, and having taught it, the medhavi, Swamiji in his commentary on this says, the medhavi is something, you know, that we pray for, like when we do the Dakshinamurti Stotram, may we have, or the Dakshinamurti prayer, may we have medha shakti. Medha shakti means, may we have memory. May we gain this knowledge, may we have jnanam, but may we also have medha, so that knowledge is available for us in words as we need it. There's a famous story in the Mahabharata where Karna, who was on the side of Duryodhana, was a great archer and had so many capacities as a warrior, but he was given a curse. You know these weapons that they would have, astras and shastras, often, almost always, they go along with a mantra. And so when you're using a particular weapon, there's a mantra that goes with it. And so what would happen with Karna is he had all of these mantras, every skill and every weapon, and I knew all of the mantras, but they would not come to mind when he needed them. That was a curse. And so medha shakti, when we pray for medha shakti, may that knowledge be available to us in words when we need it. In words, as Swamiji in his commentary will say, like, for jnani, you don't need words anymore because yourself is here. Just like I don't have to look at this and say, it's a lamp, in order for me to recognize it as a lamp. We don't need the words. But what if I want to tell you what it is or contextualize this? I need a word for it. But what if I don't have the word? So it's the same with knowledge. If you're going to be gaining knowledge, you need the words. If you're going to be teaching also this knowledge, you need the words. To have the words, you need that medha shakti, so that the knowledge that enters is something that you retain, right? And so he says, uktva shrutva cha, having shrutva, this is another little thing, shrutva comes from shru. Shru literally means to listen. We say, having listened to this teaching, right? Having listened to the acharyas, shravana is listening. And so the listening is the receiving of the teaching. The teacher can be teaching, right? The teacher can be giving out the knowledge, but if you're not listening, yes, it's not being received. And so in order for you to gain this knowledge, the teacher, of course, has to be able to teach it, but it actually has to come in to your mind. To come into your mind, you have to be listening. So shravana, it's interesting because we say the sadhanas are for gaining this knowledge. The upaya nishta is shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That can be confusing. So the shravana, it's just an interesting, you know, because Shruti means also that which is heard, right? Shruti, because it comes from the same root. So when we talk about the transmission of this teaching, it's the flow into the ears of the student, which then comes out of the mouth of the teacher into the ears of the student, who becomes a teacher and comes out the flow. So think of Shravana as the receiving of this knowledge. When we say Shravana, Shrutva, having received this knowledge through your ears, right? So having gained this, having gained this knowledge, and then having told, Uptva, Shrutva, the Medhavi. The Medhavi is that jnani, that person who has gained this knowledge, this timeless knowledge, as taught by Mithu and gained by Nachiketas. That Medhavi is someone who is Brahmaloke Mahiyate, who gains greatness, is one way of saying it, gains greatness in Brahmaloka. Brahmaloka, so we have to just look at what this means. Another way, what Swamiji will say, reveling in Brahman, he attains greatness. But what is meant by it is that reveling in Brahman means I've recognized my own being, I have the antakarna shuddhi, and my mind is basking or reveling in the ananda of myself. There aren't any longer any obstacles to that because the antakarna shuddhi is complete. Now when that's the case, that person becomes, as that maturity takes place in this knowledge, becomes beloved by all beings. The Mahatma becomes beloved by all beings. You can say like that. Becomes great because beloved. Becomes beloved because the self of the Mahatma is yourself. So when you're around a teacher who has that maturity, I always, of course, think of Swamiji because he really was a Mahatma, really was a living embodiment of that. You feel like you're with somebody who knows you more than you know yourself. You feel so completely seen because there's nothing in the way. You're completely seen because yourself is their self, and there's nothing obstructing it. And so the attraction, the attraction, they say like moths to a flame, that type of attraction is there because it's really, you can say it's an attraction to the Mahatma, but it's not really. It's an attraction to your being, you know? And there's nothing between the upadis, there's nothing between the two upadis that are making some sort of a curtain between you and the teacher who has that level of maturity. And so Swamiji was like yourself walking around. You know, you did have that level of maturity. And so here what it says, that Medhavi, you know, having gained this knowledge that is taught in the story of Nachiketas, the knowledge which Nachiketas, God, as taught by Lord Yama, that comes in every, it's cyclically through every, and is there in every creation to be gained. He says, that Medhavi, Mahiyate, gains greatness in Brahmaloka. And here, Brahma Eva Lokaha, Brahman which is the Loka. Brahman which, Loka means that which is experienced, it's a Loka. So we say that there's seven lokas up and seven lokas down. There's seven worlds of experience up and seven down, the seven lokas there. But this is Brahmaloka. This is a different type of loka. This is the loka which is Brahman, the experience which is Brahman itself. And so the one who revels in Brahmaloka is the one who revels in Brahman. It's not a loka. It's not a loka like the seven lokas up and the seven lokas down. It's the Adhishtana loka, the loka which is ever present as your being. So Shankara says here, that loka which is Atma Bhuta, whose nature is your own self. So the Brahma loka is Atma loka. And that Atma, Atma Bhuta, Upasyaha, is something which is fit to be worshipped, and therefore Upasya. it's fit to be worshipped, and then therefore mahiyate, it is considered, it gains that majesty, that greatness. We don't just worship anything. So if something is upasya, is fit to be worshipped, it's because it is essentially what we seek. Worship what we seek in this context, and we seek ourselves. And so when somebody is the embodiment of the truth of your being, then you naturally gravitate toward that. The great dukkha in the world, this whole sukha dukkha that we suffer from in the world, is that we superimpose our ananda on things that don't, on that which does not deserve it, and that which cannot take you to Brahman. At least if you project your ananda on the Mahatma, because the Mahatma isn't giving out anything else really. So it's like yourself is sitting there, you're experiencing yourself outside of yourself, And so it's very easy to have that tremendous projection, which can cause you a great deal of pain because the ananda is still out there for you. But the person who has the Mahatma, who has that ananda, shrutva, having gained that knowledge, uktva, being able to teach it, ends up being able to hold up a mirror to yourself, so that you yourself gain that ananda which you're so enamored with, you're so in love with, in all the objects in the creation that light it up. The one they say, the benign, the only benign desire, really, is the desire for moksha. That's a benign desire. We say benign because you still have to go through all the pain that desire causes. But most desires, you go through all of that pain, but that doesn't amount to anything. You go through all of the suffering, and then you have some moments of well-being, but it doesn't resolve. It just leaves you in the dust. It leaves you in the lurch, really. But this desire, even though it can be very, very painful at times because it's being thwarted, or you can't get to the class, or you don't understand something, or you can't have the conversation you need to have with your teacher. There's so many things that cause so much angst in this way or that way or this way or that way. It doesn't really matter at all, because those desires resolve into the satchit ananda, the truth of your being. And that's where the ananda is located anyway. So a desire for ananda that is projected is never going to work out very well for you. Your vairagya works out well. Allowing objects to be as they are, allowing yourself to love the objects or love the people, but have them the freedom to come and go. That works out well. But the desire, as we mean it, is what we call a binding desire. A binding desire means I need that to be happy. And the thing is, whenever I project myself onto something, I need that so that I can be happy. Because myself has been projected out there. And then it's hard, for me to be at peace when myself is out there somewhere. Then I have to do everything I can to get it and go through all of the stress and strain of that. And then, of course, be disappointed in the end because the ananda never was there in the first place. Right? So all desires lead to vairagya, I would say. All your desires lead to vairagya, lead to that recognition of the viveka vairagya, all of the qualities of a mumukshu. And then they're dumped and left behind in the end. But the thing is, the commitment or the burning desire for moksha, the burning desire to gain this knowledge, the burning desire that the love that you have for your teacher and all of these different things that go on within this world, the world of the mumukshu, those all resolve in your own ananda, which gives moksha. So that's why this medhati, who having been taught, shravana means they've been taught the shruti as a pramana according to tradition, and they say shrutva. It taught them the pramana according to the Vedas, following the Vedas. Then uktva, being a teacher teaching them, that person is beloved because they're not different from the self that they're teaching about. That's the. And so this is, Shankara introduces this verse, which comes the last two verses of this section. He says, Prastuta vijnana stucharitam aha. He says, for the sake of praising this knowledge, which is under discussion, right? The Shruti tells this verse. You know, just to bring more, there's always going to be verses in the Upanishad that try to excite you about studying the Upanishad and giving you a great value for it. You know, the Shruti itself will always be giving some sort of stuti, some sort of praise. So let's do this last verse, which is also the same type of praise. Ya imam paramam guhyam, ya imam paramam guhyam, shravayetram asam sade, shravayetram asam sade, prayata shraddha kaleva, prayata shraddha kaleva, taranantjaya kalpate, taranantjaya kalpate. It says again, Tadananjaya kalpate. No, it goes, Tadananjaya kalpata iti. Tadananjaya kalpata iti. Often they repeat the last line when they come to the end of a section. That's what's happening there. So, yaha imam paramam guhyam shravayet brahmasam siddhi prayataha Shraddha Kale Va Ted Anantjaya Kalpate Ted Anantjaya Kalpate Iti. So this one says, He who yaha imam paramam guhyam, this imam paramam, most exalted guhyam, secret, that which is the most hidden. This most exalted, most hidden knowledge, shravayet, the one who causes others to listen to this, shravayet is causal, the one who makes other people listen to this, or teaches them, is the idea. He causes others to listen to this, which is most exalted, and which is the hidden, it's the great, most exalted secret that there is. It's absolutely hidden because it's the self of the seeker. You know, so it's hidden there in the seeker. And it is the most exalted paramam. There's nothing greater than this jnanam. There's nothing greater that can be known. It's paramam. And it's also not available for you to know. With your sense organs and looking around in the world trying to find something, trying to find out what's going to give me this sense of absolute well-being or all is well with me. It's not something that I can find. It's something that I am. But my sense organs and my mind, which are based upon the sense organs in certain terms of knowledge, are all directed out, which will be the next beautiful verse, famous verse that he teaches. All the sense organs are directed outward, right? All of the vrittis in our mind, everything directed outward. And so none of them, all of them enjoy me as their adhishtanam, but the knowledge that's coming in is always of something else, right? And so I'm the very self of the seeker. So he says, the one who brings, who causes others to know this great secret, this knowledge, which is the greatest secret, where Brahma samsiddhi, within us an assemblage of brahmanas, right? So now say, here I am teaching this to this assembly of brahmanas. Assembly of brahmanas, because mumukshus are brahmanas. You can't really be a mumukshu without having predominant sattva. So the mumukshus are going to be, the ones that are being taught this are going to be brahmanas in the full sense of the word. Because if that mumukshu, if the sattva isn't dominant, they won't be interested, basically. There won't be the interest there. Some people are more sattva, some people are less sattva, you know, but there has to be a dominance, predominance of sattva in order to be available for this knowledge. So he says, the one who causes others to listen to this in an assembly of brahmanas, means at the mumukshus, or, he says, prayataha, that one who causes others to listen to this, Shraddha Kale, Prayataha means having gone through purificatory rites, at the time of Shraddha. Shraddha is when every year you do a ceremony on the death, on the date of the death of your parents. There'll be a ritual that's done on that date. And during that ritual, then there'll be a feast, and the people will be invited to partake of that feast and to participate in that ritual. And so at that time, so either for the one who is teaching to an assemblage of brahmanas, or at the time of Shraddha, when you're doing this ritual, the anniversary of the person who has died, then at that time, those who are there listening, they become kalpate, they become fit for anantyaya. Anantyaya means moksha. They become qualified, fit for moksha. They gain that blessing. And so this is again another shruti that it says it again, tad anantyaya kalpate iti. They become qualified, those ones that are there, being served at the shraddha. They become qualified, fit for moksha. They gain what they need in order to get moksha. This is another stuti. It's another praise. And this one, this type of praise often comes, so it's almost like now that you've learned or learning this Upanishad, you must pass it on. You know, it's giving a value to you to pass it on, and the blessings that you get not only from receiving this knowledge but from passing it on. So you see it in many Upanishads and Prakarana Granthas, something that is the giving praise to make you feel blessed and important, and what an honor it is to get this knowledge and how important it is to pass it on and to pass on this blessing. So it's just part of the very tradition. It's very deep in the Vedic tradition to do that type of different type of stuti. So with that, he ends this particular section, and now we're going to go into another section, which is really, really wonderful section. He starts out, I'm not going to do it, we'll do it next time, but I'm going to talk about a couple of other things now. I'll record it. This is the verse where he says, when Bhagwan created the creation, he made all the sense organs looking outwards. So then how to know the self? That's a problem.
How what?
How to know yourself? All the sense organs, all your means of knowledge are looking outward. What was he thinking? He didn't make a sense organ looking inward. Now we're all stuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Torture.
So this is it's a beautiful chapter. So
oh, that's good.
We'll do that later. Anyway. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. Her. Om Swasti Prajabhyat Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Kotramane Vyashivamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Pavantu Kale Varshatu Parajanyaha Prativi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamcho Barahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Amritam Gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.